Architecture forgot to build one critical thing, its own support system. That operational chaos you feel every day, it's why your best people burn out, why project fees get eaten up from design conflicts being discovered during construction. You have projects not making any profit, and why you're still working after your family is asleep. That's the daily chaos most architecture firms face because practical training is missing from the start. Hi, I'm Caitlin Rosier, an architect on a mission to fix this. The Mentor Dino Academy is your firm's secret weapon for giving you your time back and boosting your bottom line. It's the training system that bridges the knowledge gap, helping your teams master the skills they need to work smarter, reduce costly mistakes, and build a more profitable firm. Stop the chaos. Visit MentorDino.com to learn more. The Academy is the tool to fix the chaos, and this podcast is where we share stories and perspectives that inspire a better way forward.
Hello, and welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Rosier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. Join me each week as I speak with amazing professionals in and around the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, as we are all part of a larger interconnected community. We discuss everything from career stories, lessons learned, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, welcome to the conversation. And if you like this episode, please do me a favor by hitting subscribe, like, or share it with a friend. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own unique career journey.
Welcome back to the Mentor Dino podcast. This time, I'm going to be doing a firm series. So I've talked to so many professionals that are in different size firms. Either they've gone off on their own, they've started their own firm as a partnership, they work in a small to medium sized firm, or their firm has grown to that point, and those that work in large firms. So I thought it'd be fun to have four episodes that reflect on different aspects on different size firms. So this will be part one of four of the firm series. And for this one, I'm going to talk about solo entrepreneurs. There are so many architects that have their own business, and I've talked to so many professionals that have started their own firm, and it's truly inspirational. So it was hard to pull out just three, but I wanted to highlight three professionals for you to go check out their story, but don't hesitate to flip through all the episodes to find the other entrepreneurs. So the first clip I want to introduce you to is Bufia Joshi. She was episode number 50. And she started her own firm out in Phoenix, Arizona. She is also an immigrant, so working through the process with immigration and then starting your own firm and what that means for her travel and work-life balance. And she primarily works on residential architecture and has a passion for healthy architecture and passive house design. So if you're interested in passive house, residential architecture, or you're out in Phoenix, check out Bufia's work. So here's a little clip from Bufia Joshi. And again, she was episode number 50. And I know it is always hard to come up with a business name. I know when I came up with Mentor Dino, I kind of had more of an understanding of firms using their own names or initials when coming up with their firm name, because so many names are already taken. So, but yours is not your name. So where did Salka come from?
Yeah. So I love that question because I absolutely love the answer. So this was in 2020 when I started my firm, and I was just doing all the paperwork. Right before that, end of 2019 is when me and my husband, we took a trip to Peru. Machu Picchu was one of our bucket lists. And I came across this ancient language from Peru called Quechua, which is actually going extinct now. I saw some women singing in Quechua, and I started researching it a little bit more, and I found out that Salka in Quechua means wild, untamed, untouched land, environment, nature in broader sense. And I absolutely love that, like, untouched environment. So Salka means untouched environment, nature in this old Peruvian language. And I was telling you earlier, the spelling is S-A-L-L-Q-A. That's the actual Quechuan name. But I wanted to add an A instead of a Q. So I added that A. So now I'm having this pronunciation issues with the name because people are calling it Salaka, which, like I said, the A is silent. It's actually Salka. So I'll have to think something about that. But
just let it go. I know we were joking earlier. I get Mentor Dino, Mentor Dino, and I'm like, well, I don't want the I to be a Y. Yeah. So I just let it go.
That's the story.
No, and that's awesome. Any recommendations down in Machu Picchu? Because I know that's on my bucket list, but getting down there's
so much. We have to talk off the camera and talk about that. There is so much to do. Peru has so many different landscapes, from Machu Picchu to deserts to islands. And it's amazing.
Yeah, on the list. I'm going to keep you in my contacts as Peru exclamation point. And I'll bug you. But getting back to your firm, I know your firm focuses on design on health and wellness and weaving that through your projects. And that really aligns with the name of the company now as well. So what are some strategies you're doing in your projects? And I guess teaching, because with residential, it's oftentimes not people who are used to building and constructing things. So I don't know if there's other ways you help teach that as well.
Yeah. So for Salka, like something when I was in college, just the concept of organic architecture was very, I was fascinated by that. And it always dawned on me that, well, it's about the people who are in that space. They need to feel comfortable. For example, for Salka, it's at the core, the wellness and health of the people living in the house is at the core of it. For example, I make sure the spaces are bright. There is a lot of natural light coming in. But then viewing it from the energy efficiency perspective, like making sure that, well, the light is coming in, but heating up the space and making the house inefficient. So high-performance windows, overhangs, just all that basic stuff, making sure that is integrated into the project. And merging that with the fierce perspective, passive house perspective, is making sure the mechanical ventilation is there, bringing in fresh air, filtered fresh air. What kind of insulation are you using? Using healthy insulation and making sure there is no mold or mildew in the walls. So the walls are designed that way. So things like that. Biophilia, I make sure biophilia is integrated into the project. And when I was teaching, a lot of my students would get really excited about the concept of biophilia because it relates to, more importantly, your mental health. Like, it calms you down. Having indoor plants, having views that are looking out, integrating the outdoor and the interior spaces. So combining all of that, so making sure the health and wellness is integrated in the space, but also we are making sure that house is still energy efficient. Like I said, there are no huge windows which are heating up the space, things like that. When I was teaching residential architecture especially, I would take a whole week in which I would encourage students to think about that one thing. How would they make that space feel more, design that space in a way that the occupants would feel calmer? What would be that element that you would put into that space? So that was a huge success. And everybody felt very motivated about that as well, because it's not just about making the space look pretty, but also the occupants, making them feel comfortable mentally, physically. So yeah, that is something that I make sure I integrate in all my designs. Even if the house is not necessarily a passive building project, I do talk to my clients, educate them, even if they're not going for certification, making sure that they include certain aspects of these things into their designs. So yeah.
Yeah. And I like how you gave the students a emotion to design around, because everything was, and when I was in school, it wasn't really emotions. It was just go find your concept and go. And it was all about the form and not so much about the occupants as much. And that's my favorite part of architecture is the people we get to talk to, learn what they do and how to make a space that they can do their best, be their best selves. So I like that. If I ever teach studio, maybe I'll do that. And they've got to pick an emotion out of a hat or something and design around that. And I know you are also president of FIAS Alliance's Southwest chapter. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing over there?
Yeah. So this is the first year of FIAS Alliance's Southwest chapter. I'm very excited about this role. Right now, we are doing the foundation work for the chapter, building the network, building the website, basically bringing all the people together. The concept of the FIAS Alliance is to just reach out to these people, not just architects or builders who might be interested in a passive house, but also owners or clients who think they might be interested in having a house that is FIAS certified. So networking is at the core of the chapter. Once we have done the foundation stuff, we are going to move on to the good stuff, which is planning meetups and doing conferences, seminars. In fact, we are planning to have a conference for the chapter where people from like the builders, the vendors, architect, they will all come together, talk about their projects, talk about what's the latest, how did they implement certain standards and their success stories. They will share that. So we are very excited about that. But yeah, right now doing all the foundation stuff, creating my Instagram page for the chapter. And yeah, we have our the vice president is from New Mexico. And so Southwest is New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. So yeah, we are very excited about this bunch of people.
Yeah, I was going to ask what states are in it. So is there an alliance for each region and they've all started kicking off?
So it's divided into region, but once state has enough people, it will get broken down into states. So like New York and Massachusetts, they have their own state alliance. Austin, in fact, Texas has an Austin alliance. It has a Houston alliance. But in Southwest right now, four of these states are merged together. But once we have enough people and we have built a big community, it might get divided into state alliances.
Mm-hmm. I'm never surprised when Texas has multiple things. I've learned a lot on what goes on in Texas, but it's just like, okay, go ahead and do whatever you want.
Welcome back. And this time I want to introduce you to the first person that I've had as a repeat guest, and that's Katerina Barinova. She was episode number 7 and episode number 91. And we take two different approaches in our conversations. The first one, we talk a lot about her career path and journey. And then at the time, she was offering Vastu Shastra as a service. And now coming back for episode number 91, we really focus on the business of architecture side. She's also the podcast host of Friend of the Honeycomb. And so she's focusing even the podcast on the business side of architecture. And she has even put together a ebook that you can use if you're looking to strategize opening up your own firm. And Katerina is out in California, so dealing with the California codes and the fires that have been out there. She primarily works in residential architecture and is starting to dabble in commercial work. So I wish her luck on blending her practice between residential and commercial. And I hope you guys enjoy this clip on the business side of architecture. So the clip is coming from episode number 91, but if you want to learn more about Katerina's original story, licensure, and FOSDU, check out episode number 7.
You're entering year 3. So how are you feeling now that you've gotten to this point?
I'm feeling very good, like grateful. I definitely feel like the timing of everything, you know, there's that everything happens for a reason. And I know in the moment when I was let go of, which wasn't according to the plan, you know, my boss and I had previously discussed, I ended up getting let go with 2-week notice and then starting, you know, working in June. But I'm grateful for everything has happened the way it has happened. I started the work on my business early on. I've been putting in work. My first year was in just incredible. I'm so grateful to everybody who, you know, took me on as an architect with, like, I had no previous clients, nothing like that. I'm really grateful for how that all transpired. And really all of the lessons I've been learning along the way and where I am now. I just signed 2 projects in 1 week, which was, I haven't had that happen. I'm very grateful for that. And also I will be, I'm hoping, I know you're not supposed to say it too soon, but I will be having my first repeat client most likely this month. And I'm very grateful for that. So there's just been, you know, in reflection of everything that's happened going into year 3, I feel so much more confident than I did the other times. And there's also a part of me that I was on a call with, I'm part of an organization, AWA Plus D, Association of Women in Architecture and Design. And at the end of every month, we have a small business club Zoom call. And one, there was a woman there last month, and she was like, oh, I'm in the early stages of, you know, starting my business. So she was asking everybody, like, how did they start? And we were all kind of reflecting on, you know, what it was like to start. And you're just like, wow, you're so proud of yourself, like how you were able to do all that. Like now I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I feel comfortable. I'm confident. I know I'm not worried about how this next year is going to go, even though with, like, you've got the economy, you've got, which we can talk about that, and clients ghosting you and things like that and all this things happening. But I feel very confident where I am. And I've seen all of the hard work that I've been putting in the last 2 years. It's, I don't want to say it's finally coming back to me, but I've really been working hard the last 2 years, and now I'm seeing how putting in that time has really helped me grow my business now.
Yeah, because you can't get repeat clients within the same month, not usually.
No.
So it takes time.
No. Yes.
Are there, were there any projects you got initially that you just grabbed because you didn't have that experience, and versus what you're working on now? Like, what's that project type for you?
Oh, you will be humbled the first few projects that you get, because when you're starting off on your own, you're kind of getting the bottom of the barrel projects. Unless, I mean, you may get lucky and you may get like a remodel or something, or you may know someone who needs you, but really, you kind of say yes to every possible project at the beginning. So my first 2 projects I signed up were deck repairs. Now, I was coming off of working at a firm that worked on multi-million dollar residential homes. So working on a deck repair was kind of like, ugh. Now, these deck repairs were on coastal homes, so I was still within, like, the world of where I wanted to work, but it was a deck repair, which at first I was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, small, but in that moment, when you're setting up your plotting system or your, because I work in CAD, so like your layer system, how do you want your drawings to look? You kind of want to start small because that way you can grow your systems and your standards. Excuse me, sorry. Sorry, it's so dry here. I'll try to jump in where I left off. So you want to learn all the, like, the standards and everything on how your project's going to go, you know, what formats are you going to use. So it's good to start small. I'm no longer doing deck repair projects. I'm happy to share. I am doing, yeah, thank you. Yay. I'm doing remodels. ADUs are a big thing in California, accessory dwelling units. So I have one of those going on. I have one that was supposed to be an ADU, but due to local regulations, we're converting a garage into habitable space versus into an ADU for clients who want to age in place. So for their caregiver, they want to convert their garage into a unit for their caregiver. So I've got that project. I've got a few remodels. I have my biggest project under construction finally, which is a remodel of about a 1,400 square foot home. And although there's not much architecturally that's changing, there's a few architectural elements I got to design. And I'm also realizing my CA time, my construction admin time for a project like that, I'm now learning, because I've had, the deck repair. Yeah, you go to the site once or twice, right? It's a deck. You're not going to be checking it, constantly. But when a whole house is being remodeled and now you're in charge of all the decisions and the, so now I'm putting those systems into place on how am I going to update my drawings? How am I going to, update the contractor, my field reports? What does that all look like? So constantly learning, growing. Yeah, but I'm definitely not in the deck repair projects. And I'm also now have the ability to say no to projects similar scope of that. There's a recent project that came across my desk. I don't want to say I'm above it, but I don't want to do it because it's so small scale. And I now have the ability to say no to projects like that, like the size of a deck repair. And so I'm very grateful for that, that now I don't have to say yes to every project. I can say yes to projects that align with where I want to take my company.
Yeah, because there's a lot of business advice, especially when you start out, to kind of grab what you can, but don't put on your front page of your website things you don't want to continue doing work on. So yes. I'm sure if I pulled up your website, I wouldn't see any deck repairs.
Anyway. No. No. And that's a hard thing to do, especially at the beginning. And I'm glad you brought that up is, you want to show your work. And so, a lot of clients early on were like, well, can I see some of your work? And at my previous firm, I talked to my boss about it and I said, hey, can I show some work? But we didn't do renderings at that firm. So really it was just construction documents. And you show that to a client and they're like, well, that's great, but I want to see a vision. I want to see
it's
a rendering.
It's not a pretty picture.
Exactly. So one thing to do too is I would do a make-believe project. And so I would design a project, do a little rendering of it, hand sketch or in Photoshop or whatever in SketchUp, and put that on my website as my portfolio. So that is something if you are listening, you're like, well, Katarina, I don't have anything. I don't have a portfolio. I'm just starting my own firm. Do a little fun sketch, do a little project, or take a project you did at another firm and do it in a different, do it how you want to do it. Maybe change a few things, tweak a few things to your style. And then, you can just say, this is just a schematic design. You don't have to share that this isn't under construction. You should be like, this is a concept plan. I have a project on my website of a kitchen that it's not a kitchen I'm actually working on. I just used a kitchen based off of a project I was working on, but another client wanted to see other kitchens I've done. So I, quickly put together something so I could have it for that presentation, but then I also put it onto my website so that you can see, different styles. It was more of a mid-century modern kitchen. So yeah, there's definitely, you can have fun with it. Even if you don't have, you're just doing deck repair projects, you can work on other stuff, during the other time to build your portfolio.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's projects out there that everyone's worked on that it went a direction they didn't like, whether it be, the client directed it that way or a senior designer wanted to go this direction, but it's different than what you would have done. There's so many ways and opportunities to take a look at projects and say, hey, if I could just do it the way I wanted, here's what I would do. And that showcases your design and your thought process with it, too. So
Exactly.
And I know we haven't touched on an ebook you wrote and the podcast, so I'm going to hit both of those. And then I want to get to your word of the year, because you always do a word of the year diving in. And so there's a lot going on, which goes right along with your word of the year. So you launched an ebook, the Mindful Blueprint for Launching Your Architecture Firm. So I wanted to touch on that since we talked about launching a firm. So how did you decide you wanted to start the ebook and what information you pulled to create that?
So yes, the ebook kind of came through, I was already starting to take some notes about, you know, my process, what I was learning, what the steps I took, because I started noticing a lot of people were like, well, how did you do this? And how did you, and I started getting questions about, you know, how did you set up a corporation? You know, how did you set up a bank account? Like, you know, there's all these things. And so I thought, well, why don't I make an ebook? I also wanted to kind of dip my toes in the world of passive income, making ebooks online. Like, can I do this? Do I know how to do this? You know, that's a whole nother world that I had to learn. And as you know, having digital products and marketing them and putting them online. And it's like, I was like, well, let's just try this. Because last year, my word of the year was create. So I'm like, oh, I'll just create this. So I created the ebook and I gave myself a month. I was like, I'm going to give myself a month to write it, edit it, market it, and post about it. So it was supposed to come out January of last year. About a week into that, I was like, this is absolutely impossible. Like, who was I? Who was I to make this? Now, thankfully, I hadn't announced it that I was going, and I said, I think I was working on it. So then I was like, well, maybe I'll do it by the end of February. And then I was like, nope, who are you kidding? So I was like, what about March? March is my birthday. I was like, okay. So I ended up launching it end of March. And it's essentially a workbook on different steps of how to start your own architecture firms.
Welcome back. And I got one more professional that I want to introduce you to, and it's David Stumpf. He is an architect here in Pittsburgh and Buffalo. So his practice has expanded to Buffalo since we've talked, and he is doing some amazing work. He does do a mix of residential and commercial, but for his story, he really talks about a lot of the challenges when you're trying to start your career through a recession. And a lot of professionals, especially that mid-career, understand layoffs. There's so many professionals that left the industry altogether. And there's a good amount of professionals that that's when they decide to start their own firm. And that is also with David's case as well. After trying to stay within companies and firms and really taking hold of owning his career and what he wanted to do. So David Stumpf, his episode was episode number 41. If you want to hear the full story on his initial experience dealing with the recession, moving around the country to be able to have a job, and then launching his own firm and being between Buffalo and Pittsburgh right now and seeing a lot of his amazing work. So check out episode number 41, David Stumpf, if you want to learn more about his story.
The whole time, I guess, ever since I was in college, I was like, I want to work for myself. That was the eventual goal. Grew up in a family business, so understanding like what that dynamic is, and I really knew what it meant to be able to work for yourself, be proud of like putting your name on something. My family's business is named after the family. So Stumpf Moving and Storage. And so I got to ride around in a truck with my name on it all the time. And I learned quickly that the work that I do better be good because my name's on it and I'm backing it up. And that kind of just instilled that in me. And so as I went to Dallas, my goal was 5 years in Dallas, and then I'm going to start my own practice. Thought was go back east. Initially, I was like thinking Charleston because my brother was living in Savannah, and a big fan of preservation and historic architecture. But he ended up moving. Pandemic kind of tossed everybody around, and he ended up taking a job in Phoenix. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to Phoenix. So I stayed in Pittsburgh, and I utilized my severance and the Biden bucks that we were all getting to start my practice, which was really nice. It was kind of like, if you go back to your initial question, like what was the catalyst? It was just, I got thrown into the fire. I did 2 years, a little over 2 years in Dallas. And then basically every firm was laying off all of their staff or a good chunk of their staff. I think we were not the first firm to do that. We were hearing rumors about firms all over town. They let us work from home. And then all of a sudden our developers, especially the ones with their money tied in the market, were like, hey, full stop on these projects. And then they were furloughing half the staff and laying people off. So I was one of the ones that got the axe during that process. And then I was just thrown in. I was like, okay, well, this is 3 years earlier than I wanted, but, I get to get started. I didn't have as much imposter syndrome at that point as I did back when I, you know, 2 years prior. So I felt like, hey, I'll figure it out. And knowing that if I went back home, there is a subset of Pittsburgh that has no architects. The east side of the city might be giving out my juicy goss now or like my trade secrets, but the east side of the city had no architect between Wilkins Township, or not even that, like Edgewood and Greensburg, the next like major city, the county seat for the next county over. There's no architects. It was, and there was a need because you have, I guess, higher profile communities or wealthier communities that are constantly building new homes or custom homes, that kind of stuff, all between the two. The only guy in Greensburg is Lee Calisti, and he only does modern work. So, I mean, he does really good work, but it's only modern. He won't take any other projects. And so that left a gap. And placing myself there, I knew I was going to at least get a couple of projects to get started, because I didn't have any contacts. I'd just been out of town for 2 years, and coming back, nobody really knew who I was. So I planted myself there. When I set up, I had set up a website to try and do like some moonlighting, but it never worked. I just transferred all that information over, and I set up a Google business, and just kind of went the route of people will Google architect near me. I'm going to be the architect that's near them. I'm going to have to take crappy projects that don't pay well to get started, but I'll make a name for myself. And that's kind of what I did for a while. And that's, I mean, nose to the grindstone, feet to the fire. I just got tossed right into it. There's no other explanation. I think, I don't think I would have been hesitant starting if the pandemic hadn't happened, but it would have been get to that 5 year point and then, okay, now let's go.
Yeah. But sometimes we need a mini push, mm-hmm. like the layoffs that happen at the people who were hesitant to either start their own firm or pivot out of architecture or just do something else. Sometimes it's a layoff to push them because there's nothing holding them back at that point. It's right. Hey, why not? Let's take this opportunity. Opportunity's in front of me. Let's go do it.
Yeah. I think, I'm not the first graduate from my, I don't know. I honestly don't remember who I went to undergrad with. there's one guy I actually worked with at Peter's office who I had studio class with. And I graduated with his wife, who is not working in architecture anymore. Other than that, I have no clue about my undergrad, but from my grad class was about 30 people. I'd probably say about half of us are still in architecture. And of that, only one other person has started their own practice. And so it's something kind of to be said. I think I just went into it the whole time with this this aggressive attitude of I need to learn what I don't know. And then I'll jump into it and I'll kind of learn as I go, which I have done. Yeah, I don't think I was as scared as that, as like moving to Dallas and going to a city where I don't know anybody and starting with a job that I am like, maybe this is a little over my head, but we'll figure it out. I think I was more worried about that than actually starting my practice.
Yeah. Plus, it's at least you were coming home. So it's like, well, even if other friends have moved away, you got family to hang out with
right.
as you build your network.
Yeah, my twin brother, he was still here and I moved in with him. I rented a room from him for a while and I kind of like poured all my money into the, like starting the business. Yeah, I think thankfully I had a little bit of savings, but thankfully the Fed was giving us like printing that money for us. And I know not a lot of people can have that opportunity now, especially like 4 years later. And we're looking at like, what did we do that we just spent all that money, but you know, I could have bought a coffee table with it.
Yeah.
But instead I started a business. So, I look back on that and I think I made some good decisions.
Yeah. And I know shifting a little bit into your practice itself, I know you've mm-hmm. done residential and some light commercial work.
Yeah.
Has there been one you enjoy most, or do you like kind of dabbling in both?
Yeah. So I think, I enjoy both, or at least aspects of both. I think the residential is the most fun. It's like, in a way, the most creative. You get to do a lot of really cool work. You get to work with a lot of really cool couples, people who like have this vision for something and they trust you to be able to bring that out. I think that's like a lot of the driving factor with why I still like residential work. I've had a couple of pitfalls within that, but I think overall it's been the most fun aspect. But then again, on the side of commercial, I've had a lot of like really bad clients, and that comes from that willingness to take the cheap jobs just to get started, to build the name for myself. But I've also had some really amazing clients. Like, I worked on a floral shop. It's a 7,600 square foot floral shop, two stories, very modern building. And I developed this relationship with the family that owns that business that I would have never had I not been willing to take a project that I felt like was way out of my depth. Going into that, I'd never run a project of that scale. Even, it doesn't sound like it's a big building, but it's a big building and it's a big scope. And I was running a team of engineers and contractors myself, and I had never done that. So even though I had like little bits of experience here and there, I think that was the most fulfilling. Honestly, that was probably one of the most fulfilling projects I've had because of the clients and getting to see my vision come to life. And they trusted me fully. It's the only modern building in East McKeesport, Pennsylvania. It was the only building built there in the last 20 years. Prior to that, there was a gas station built. And then prior to that, a car wash. And then you could probably go back to the 60s before another building was built. So it was really interesting getting this, like, and exciting getting to see my myself get to make a mark on this community and help it help guide what this community is. And you get to share that with everybody. Whereas with a residential project, you don't really get to share that with other people. And you maybe not get to go back to it every once in a while. I've done some pretty big houses where the builder just cuts me off and won't let me go back on site or look at the house, it's frustrating to deal with that kind of stuff. So I think there's a lot of lessons learned in all of that, but I still enjoy both. But I've learned really how to pick clients throughout all of that.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for somebody starting out to try to decipher a bad client from a good client? Like, do you have things that you look for?
You know what? I think there's little tells, and this is going to sound vague, and I don't want it to sound vague because this is like truly how I do this. But when you meet with somebody, would you want to be friends with them? Do they seem like they're a little shifty, or they're going to try nickel dime you, or do they seem like they're a genuinely good person? Are they receptive to criticism or feedback? Are they willing to listen to you as a professional or as an advisor? Like, are they there with sketch out floor plan and say, I want this? Well, that's not my ideal client. The ideal client might come with a floor plan that's sketched out, and they say, like, been thinking through this in my head and I kind of like the way this is working, but I trust you and I trust how you do what you do. And I'd like to see what we as a team come up with. You know, I'm also not the egotistical architect. I'd rather just work as a team to come up with something that this person has in their mind as, I guess, the ideal vision. And so by picking those people, I'm just looking for, is this somebody that I think is genuine? Is this somebody that I think is going to be a good friend? Is this a relationship that can last over 6 months, a year, however long it takes to do this process? So, it's been more difficult with small business owners One was a salon owner, and I know when I met her, she was all over the place. And I was like, there's something, I don't know about this one. I told her a couple of occasions, I don't want to take your project. She's like, oh, you're the only one. She was a tenant of a building I'd worked on, so I got a recommendation that way. The building owner, great client. This girl, she was just all over the place. She was 23, opening a salon, had no clue what she was doing. Had her lawyer look over the contract. And I was like, no. if a client has your lawyer look over the contract and then the lawyer wants to pick it apart, run. That's not a good client. Because they're going to do that.
Especially for something so small.
That one ended up being a nightmare. And I didn't want to take the project, but I kind of got like, I could have used the money. And then also, I kind of got cornered into it because I felt obligated to the building owner because he referred me to him. I put myself in that rock and hard space because I felt obligated, but if a client has their lawyer look over it and they're starting to tear it apart, just don't take the job. It's too many headaches. It's not worth it. The best clients are the ones who trust you, and trust you to do what you do. And they look at your fee and they say, okay, you know, they're not going to fight you on it because you need to make money just as much as they do. And you're a professional and you should be making money commensurate to the job that you're doing. You shouldn't have to live on, or, you know, scrape by or live on pennies, to be able to survive and to do the profession that you love. I love architecture, but we need money to survive. And, I'm not going to be that old school architect that's just, you know, a starving artist. So, that's a little side tangent, but.
All right. And I hope you guys enjoyed those little clips. It was really hard to pick three people to pull together for a solo firm owner because I've interviewed so many firm owners. And so thank you to these ones, and please go check out the other solo firm owners as well. And again, on this episode, it was episode number 50 with Bufya Joshi, residential architect, immigrant, and passive house designer. Katarina Barinova, she is an architect out in California, has her own firm. Episodes number 7 and 91. In 91, we focus more on the business side, and number 7 was a little bit more on her career path and starting her firm and then some other services she offered at the time. And then finally, episode number 41 that you just listened to was David Stumpf. He does commercial and residential work, working in Pittsburgh and Buffalo, mainly for his office locations, but doing a little bit of mix between not just residential. So if you go off on your own, you do not have to just be a residential architect. You can do commercial work as well, which I know tends to be a little bit more of a stigma. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode and look forward to the other episodes, part of the firm series. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.